John chapter 4, verses 7 to 12.
Sorry, Mary, it's one John. I'm sorry. I am very sorry. John 4 is excellent, and I will preach on it at some time, but today's text, it does get confusing. So 1 John chapter 4 and verses 7 through to 12. Is that okay?
Fine, thank you
so much.
Thank you. That's 1 John, chapter 4, verses 7 to 12, page 1160. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son to the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Thank you. What a great passage, isn't it? What a great passage. And I want us to think about that today. Now, last week, I let you know how much I love Strictly Come Dancing, didn't I? You all know how much I love Strictly Come Dancing, is that true? Yeah? Well, if you weren't here last week, it's not true. But all week I've been practicing dancing, so I thought, I sang to you last week, I thought I'd dance to you this week. Is that okay? You don't mind dancing in here, do you? I'm not very good at it, but I'm going to ask DJ Doug to put on a track for me. Are you ready, Doug? Oh, yes. You ready? I've missed it now, haven't I? Here we go. Are you ready? That's enough. That's the limit of my dancing. That's it. I'm not going to dance ever again. But I read this definition of the Macarena, which I thought was very appropriate for me. It said, the Macarena is a fun dance for elderly people. So I thought, that definitely, it definitely suits me down to the ground, and maybe a few of you as well. But what I've learned is, dancing's no fun on your own, is it? Dancing on your own is not a lot of fun, is it? You know? But anyway, that's the best I can do. So I'm putting myself out there for you in these early weeks so that you have very low expectations of me in the future. Now, last week, we looked at what it looked like to love God. We looked at the greatest commandment, and we looked at that text, that commandment Jesus said, the greatest commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, wasn't it? And we looked at how important that first thing is, to love God with all. But yet how easy it is perhaps for some of us not to do that. And in the interaction Jesus had with the teacher of the law, the teacher of the law knew the answer to the question, but Jesus still said to him, you're not far from the kingdom. You know, because you haven't really understood what love really looks like, loving God really looks like. And he got a bit mixed up in his motivation about what loving God was, and he thought it was about doing something and keeping law and ritual, whereas God just says, I just want you to love me with everything that you have. It's as simple as that. This morning I want to look at the greatest connection, and here's what Jesus said. If you've got your Bibles, you might want to just turn to John chapter 13, verse 34 to 35, because Jesus had something really important to say, and if I remember where this flicker is, then I can advance it to where it is. There we are. A new command I give you, Jesus said. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must what? By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you... It's pretty clear, isn't it? It's pretty clear that the next step after loving God is that we need to learn what it is to love one another. If you look at the context of this particular passage in John chapter 13, you'll see that Jesus just washed his disciples' feet. He's shown them what love really is going to look like. He's washed their feet, which in, you know, was a big step in it for Jesus to do and for the disciples to receive. And they didn't quite understand it, but Jesus said, this is what love is going to look like. He just told them that someone was going to betray him. He just told them that one of them was going to deny him very soon. And within that context of foot washing and betrayal and denial, Jesus says this to them, that the key thing for you now is that you love one another. Because things are going to happen that are going to put you to the test. And your love for one another is going to be tested incredibly. And so he says three times, love one another. How do we love one another? He says, as I have loved you. So as I've washed your feet, as I'm about to give my life for you, I want you to love one another as I have loved you. The bar is set really high for the sort of love that Jesus wants us to share with one another. And the outcome of that is that everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. No pressure then. No pressure. But what a key to allowing the world to see something different. What a key to allowing the world to see Jesus in reality if we learn to love one another. And in the reading that Mary read to us from 1 John, probably written by the same John, he reminds the post-resurrection community, the church that he was writing to at that particular time, he reminds them how important this connection is. This sense of loving one another. I think John was just wanting to be a swot to say, you know what, I listened to Jesus and I really understood what he was saying, so I want to tell you what Jesus said. Dear friends, let us love one another. He's just reiterating what he'd heard firsthand from Jesus around that table on that particular day. Because he'd understood the post-resurrection community needed to be exactly the same as that group of disciples. And every post-resurrection community, the church, needs to reflect exactly what we ought to do. No one has ever seen God, John wrote, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete. It's one thing to love God, but the completion of love is that we love one another. That word complete in the 1 John text that we had means to be fully stretched, complete, at its limit, at the furthest that it could possibly be. That's the sort of love that would be complete in us if we love God and if we love one another. See, this is the greatest connection, that we as the people of God have the joy and the opportunity and the responsibility of ensuring that at the heart of our life together as Newcastle Baptist Church is that we love one another. And what a witness to our world. How do you feel the world is at the moment? How does it look to you at the moment? Does it look happy? Joined together? United? If ever the world needs the church, it needs it now. If ever the world needs a church that loves one another and embraces people into its family, it needs it now, doesn't it? The church has the opportunity to be a prophetic witness to our world, to our community, that we can love one another, that we can work together to reflect the sort of love that we know Jesus has for us. That the church is the place where lives can flourish, where people can be loved and love, where people can be known and know, and where family can be built to such an extent that it becomes this witness about Jesus if we love one another. So how can we do that better? How can we get better connected to each other? How can we love one another in the reality of what Jesus is talking about that? I think the first thing we need to do is to acknowledge our diversity. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, that passage where Paul talks about the church as the body and different parts of the body, he says this: just as a body, though one, has many parts, all its parts form one body. The body is not made up of one part, but of many. And Paul says, you know, that we aren't all hands, we aren't all ears, we aren't all eyes, we aren't all noses, but each part has a part to play, and together we form a whole. We acknowledge our diversity, that we're different, but we come together as part of the body that shows the world that we are loving one another. There's something bigger than just us as individuals, that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And we can love each other. We can love one another because of our diversity, because we're different. The church is a beautiful body, isn't it? I mean, just turn to the person next to you and say to them, you've got a beautiful... No, we better not do that, no. That would be a little bit weird today. But, you know, look around. We're a beautiful body. We acknowledge our diversity, our differences. We look different. We have different stories, different backgrounds, different skills, different abilities, different passions. And yet together, as Paul has said there, we come together as part of the body. We acknowledge our diversity, but that brings us closer, and we each have a part to play in that. What one of the things we've noticed as we've moved around the country in various churches we've been to is that the number of different accents and dialects there are. You know, our first church was in Northumberland. It was actually 10 miles north of the other Newcastle, you know, the Newcastle upon Tyne, in a new town called Cramlington. And our background is Salvation Army, and if you know anything of the Salvation Army just send you to places, and the congregation just get lumped with whoever they get sent. They don't get a choice who they get. So this poor congregation in Cramlington got lumped with us. And we'd just gone through training. We were very young and inexperienced. And this, bless them, they had forgiveness at their heart. But if you've ever been to Northumberland, you'll know it's quite an interesting accent up there. Has anybody been to Northumberland? Yeah, it's a beautiful accent, isn't it? Don't you think? And our son was born there. Carly was born in Ashington in Northumberland, where the Charlton brothers were born. So great heritage. And he began to develop this lovely Northumberland accent. It was gorgeous. But we didn't have a clue what people were saying when we went there. We're from the south. And that whole region was mining villages. And in fact, every village you went to, they all had a different accent. It was the most weird thing. For the first 6 weeks, I hadn't got a clue what anybody was saying. I nodded hopefully in the right places and shook my head in hopefully the right places, but I didn't have a clue what was going on. And then after 5 years, we got an envelope through the door, Salvation Army way. 6 weeks later, we were off to Oldham in Lancashire. And boy, they can talk a strange language as well down there as well. And then we went down to the south, where fortunately they talk proper down the south. So that was, at least we could understand them. And now look where we've come. And it's full of Scots people, and I don't understand them anyway. So I'm not quite sure where I've landed at the moment. But despite the accents, the one thing that we've seen in all those places, I'm sure you know this, is that people are beautiful wherever you go. People have a beautiful story and beautiful experiences of Jesus. And somehow the accent doesn't matter, does it? We come together and we acknowledge our diversity, and we become this body, this beautiful body that reflects Jesus to the world. I'm glad I'm north of Birmingham, by the way. That's the one blessing of it. No, there's many blessings to being here. But it doesn't matter what accent you have, what dialect you speak, whether English is a second language, whatever your age is, whatever your gender is, whatever job you hold down, it doesn't matter, because at the heart of the body of Christ, we celebrate diversity and we love one another, because that is the universal language that this world needs to see. What a witness we can be. And I believe it's our time to be that witness to our divided community, to our divided schools, our divided workplaces. It's our time to be the light of a group of people who acknowledge our diversity and love one another. Because that's attractive to people who are unsure as to what's going on in life, or feel neglected, or feel marginalized, or feel alone, or uncertain, that we get to demonstrate that there's something greater that we're heading for. There's someone greater that we're keeping in first place. And the world gets to see Jesus. Differences, yes. Diversity, yes. But not divided. Let's be his people. Secondly, we need to act with humility. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. See, there's no arrogance in community. None of us can say to anyone else in this community, I don't need you. That humility is the hallmark of a group of people who want to and choose to love one another. See, if I know who I am, and I'm confident in who I am, then I can be confident in who you are as well. And I can be aware of who I'm not in order to affirm who you are. Self-awareness is so critical, isn't it, to building team. If any of you are part of a team at work, you'll know that self-awareness is so important to building that team, to building community, to building church. See, when I know what part I can play and everybody knows what part they can play, then together we can act with humility and affirm and encourage one another in that place. See, if you're arrogant, then you intimidate other people. If you're not showing humility, then other people will feel that they can't contribute anything. And that is totally opposite to the sort of community that loves one another that Jesus wants us to build. There's a great story about Muhammad Ali, one of the most humble people in the world, don't you think, Muhammad Ali? But he was on a plane one day and he refused to buckle up his seatbelt. And if you've ever flown, you'll know that the plane will not take off unless everyone has their seatbelt on. Yeah? And so the steward was given the task to go to Muhammad Ali and say to him, Mr. Ali, please could you fasten your seatbelt? And Muhammad Ali is reportedly supposed to have said, Superman don't need no seatbelt. And the steward said, well, Mr. Ali, I need you to fasten up, otherwise we can't take off. And Muhammad Ali kept repeating, Superman don't need no seatbelt. Well, eventually the steward got a little bit clever on that, and the last time that Mr. Ali said, Superman don't need no seatbelt, the steward replied, to be honest, Mr. Ali, Superman don't need no plane. Community can't be built with an arrogant isolation. Most superheroes act alone, and the church is no place for superheroes. It's a place for connection, for strength together. The greatest connection can't happen if we say things like, I can do it on my own, I don't need you. That's not a place that is reflecting the love of God. We need one another. And a community transforming church can only be built if people in it will act with true humility. Yeah, there may be somebody here today who is feeling alone with an issue that you're carrying at the moment. It might be a relationship issue. It might be with friendship or with a spouse or with a parent or with a child. And you're not quite sure where to go, but you've never shared it with anybody. You're trying to solve it alone. There may be someone here with work issues, and the thought of going to work tomorrow is just filling with dread already, and you've never shared it with anybody. There may be somebody here today who has a moral issue going on, and you're trying to keep it secret and hide it, thinking you can manage, or an addiction issue, whether it might be gambling or alcohol or pornography or whatever addiction it might be, and you're trying to manage it on your own, you're trying to solve it on your own, and no one knows. And you may be at the very start of it, or you might be right in the middle of it, or for someone today, you might be right at the end of it. And you're getting close to the edge because you're trying to manage on your own. And the Christian community is a place where love for one another demands that we ask for help. Because love is the overriding value that we hold dear. If you think you can manage on your own, it's a lie. It's a lie. We find the humility to ask for help with people who we love and who love us. in Ecclesiastes in chapter 4 and verse 13. In the Message paraphrase, it says, "By yourself, you're unprotected. With a friend, you can face the worst. Can you round up a third? A three-stranded rope isn't easily snapped." Now, hopefully you've got a piece of string, have you? I wonder, David, could you get the basket, David? And if you haven't got a piece of string, I wonder if you could just indicate and David will give you a piece of string. Thank you. What I'd like you to do, I'd like you to find two other people. And I'd like you to put your string together as a three-corded rope. If you're very clever, you could plait it, if you're very clever. But if not, it doesn't matter. And so, if you can get up, move, find two other people, and put your string together as a three-stranded rope, okay? That's your task now. Come on, Sarah. Are you good at plaiting? So what I'd like you to do then is for one of you to have the completed piece of string, which is now a rope. And you can put it around your wrist if you'd like to, or you can just put it in your Bible. And I want you to, this week, just affirm and pray for those two people who you've joined with. And then perhaps during the week, in a couple of days, you could pass it on to the next person who is part of your three-stranded rope. And then that person could pass it on to the third person. So that we acknowledge and affirm to each other that we're not going to act alone. That we're part of something much stronger and much bigger in our community that seeks to love one another. Everybody finished? Well, if you can sit down and carry on, but we better move on a little bit, otherwise time's going to press on. Some of you are very special. You have a green piece of rope, don't you, as well? A green piece of string. That's very special. You see, on your own, you're just a piece of string. But when you're with other people, you begin to look like a rope. And you know what a rope can do? It can keep someone away from the edge. It can hold them tight when they're just about to go off the edge. It can keep them strong when they're just about to go under and buckle because of an issue that they're facing. So let's be the sort of community that holds on to people. Let's be the sort of community that asks for help if we need it, that says to somebody, "Could you just hold me while I'm going through this?" You don't need to tell them everything. You just need to say, "Could you just pray for me, pray with me, support me, encourage me?" Because you're not going to survive on your own. That's why Jesus said it three times, more than three times. That's why John reiterated it in his letter to the church. Let's love one another. Let's ask for help. Can you just turn to the person next to you and repeat this after me? Just say to them, "We need one another." Say to them, "You're not Superman or Wonder Woman. But we have a supernatural God who longs for us to connect together. and love one another. Doesn't it sound simple? It's putting it into practice with humility that keeps us strong, that keeps us a witness to the world. If you're feeling isolated today, if you haven't told anyone what you're going through right now, please, please share it with someone before you leave today. Please ask someone to pray with you. They don't need to know everything, but please don't act alone. You don't need to. And finally, to get this greatest connection, we celebrate our unity. We celebrate the fact that everyone is needed in the body of Christ. We can complain that other people are not like me or not like you. The hand can complain that everybody's serving. The eye can complain that you don't see what's going on. The ear can complain that you're not listening. We can all complain. We can slap label after label after label on people. The world does it every single day. We've all got labels given to us. And we could do the same, but we don't. We choose not to. We choose to celebrate our unity that we find in Jesus. And we demonstrate the differences, but it doesn't divide us. We celebrate our unity by listening to other people. People who may be different from us. People who may disagree with us. People who may be distinct from us. But we get to listen to demonstrate exactly what Jesus said about loving one another. Have you ever been in a conversation and you've forgotten to listen? When all you're working out in your head is what you're going to say when that person has finally stopped talking. Have you done that? I have to confess one of my faults, and you're going to have to hold me up to this one, is that I will sometimes speak before you've finished speaking. And I'm really training hard to not do that. And if I do it, please tell me, won't you? Because it devalues what it is that you're saying, and that's the last thing I want to do. But some of us, we're working out what we're going to say before the other person has even finished. Listening gives us the opportunity to understand what the other person has to say, what their perspective is, what their situation is, what their point of view is. And then you can speak without disrupting the unity while we strive to understand one another. There are so many things I don't know, I have to confess. And how am I going to speak into the things I don't know unless I listen? I'm guessing, looking down at you, some of you vote Conservative. Some of you vote Labour. A few of you I've met, I've no doubt you vote for Monster Raving Loony Party. But you know, maybe you've got a particular political viewpoint, but unless you're willing to listen to somebody else's viewpoint, how will we ever celebrate our unity? We'll just allow ourselves to be divided. Some of you voted to leave. Some of you voted to remain. And we can allow that to separate us if we want, or we can reflect the unity that we find in Jesus. You may never be persuaded by somebody else's point of view, but you might be able to come to a place of harmony. Peter writes, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8, "Finally, all of you, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble." Now, I don't know many Greek words, but this is my most favorite Greek word ever, okay? Eusplagnos. It's translated as compassionate. It means the stirring of the bowels, okay? That's why I love it so much, because it's so descriptive, isn't it? It means living with guts, really. That's what it means, to live with guts. And I think it takes guts to step over a line that you haven't stepped over before in terms of meeting somebody else and listening to somebody else. It takes guts to do that. It takes guts to step into a place where you know you're going to disagree with somebody, but at least you can listen to what it is they have to say. There's so much I don't know. I don't know what it's like to have 2 under-5s in the household and you're not getting to sleep any night. I don't know what that's like, but if I listen to someone who knows that, then do you know what? That's going to help a lot. I don't know what it's like to be a woman, to be honest. My only excuse is I've been a man all my life, but you know, I don't know. So I need to listen to understand. Some of you need to listen to men. I don't know what it's like to have to commute, to get in the car and commute to work 2-3 hours a day and back again every single day in order to support my family and be exhausted every single night. I don't know what that's like. I need to listen to understand what that's like. I don't know what it's like to face the struggle of sexuality or gender. I've got to listen to understand what that's like, because if I don't, then our unity is disrupted and we'll never come round that place. You've got to live with guts, you see. You've got to take some risks in order to find out and discover what it looks like. Ephesians 4 says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. And then I can begin to understand. See, I do know what it's like to invest faith into a child and then see them walk away from that faith. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to have a mum who struggles with dementia, and I know what it's like to watch her diminish over 9 years in who she was. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be married for 35 years to the same person. Some of you know what that's like. See, I know some things, but there's lots I don't know. But when I listen, then I can understand. If I live with guts, then we can learn to love one another. And we celebrate our unity around the table. So don't walk away from someone who isn't like you. Don't turn your back on them. Don't stop loving them, because God hasn't stopped loving you. And perhaps we need to change our posture and just to kneel and wash feet, just to listen. That's good, isn't it? That's good to celebrate, isn't it? You know, at the beginning, I danced alone, and it wasn't very good, was it? Wouldn't it be great if we could dance together? Don't you think it'd be great if we could dance together? We won't now, but because time has gone on. But you know, the world needs to see us dancing together. It doesn't have to be the Macarena. I was going to do the birdie song, but hey, you know. But what if the world could see us dancing together? And then we encourage them and say, why don't you come and join us? Why don't you come and join in this community that celebrates its unity, that acknowledges its diversity, that has the greatest connection of all at the heart of it, of obedience to Jesus, where we love one another. Yeah, we're going to gather around this table now. And this is the ultimate expression of love, isn't it? This is the ultimate place where Jesus demonstrated his love through his death on the cross, and where we get to remember and to acknowledge that as well. So those who are serving, I wonder if you could just come and sit here at the front here.